We can turn our Bibles again to Job chapter 9. And we will read verse 32 and 33. Really, these insightful words from Job in his moments of anguish. This is page 457. Job says, "For God is not a man as I am, that I may answer him, and that we should go to court together. Nor is there any mediator between us who may lay his hand on us both." And if we look at our Heidelberg Catechism, page 31, question 12, "Since then, by the righteous judgment of God, we deserve temporal and eternal punishment, is there no way by which we may escape that punishment and be again received into favor? Answer, God will have his justice satisfied. And therefore, we must make this full satisfaction either by ourselves or by another." Children, if you are arguing with your brother and things are getting heated and tense, there comes that moment where mom or dad have to step in. They have to stand between you. Maybe they put you on this side of the room and they take your brother and put him on this side of the room. And they say, "Okay, now we're going to resolve this. We're going to figure this out." What your parents are doing there, they're acting as a mediator. They're standing in between you, and they're going to take you by one hand and your brother by his hand, and they're going to bring you together. They're going to reconcile you, make you shake hands at the end or give each other a hug. That's what a mediator does. They stand in between two parties and bring reconciliation. They bring you together. And this afternoon, that's what we're going to hear about. We're going to hear about our need for a mediator. And that's really the main point of this message, is that we need a mediator, one who can stand between two parties, between God, the offended party, and between us, the offender. And so we don't need just any old mediator. We need one who can actually do the job, one who can actually bridge that massive gulf, one who can put a hand on God and a hand on humanity and bring them together. And so we need a perfect, a special, a unique mediator. And that's what this Heidelberg Catechism Lord's Day is all about. But in our Bible passage, we also heard about a mediator. You see that in Job 9, verse 33, where Job says, "Nor is there any mediator between us." And so we need to remember Job's context. Here he is, and he's suffering terribly. He's been through such horrible affliction like none of us have endured. All of his wealth has been taken away in just a matter of days. His children have been wiped out. He's been inflicted with these boils. And so he's languishing, really, in these moments. And with all of these tragic events happening to Job, he's trying to wrestle his way through it. Job was a godly man. God says so himself in Job 1 and Job 2. And you get to the end of Job, and God is still affirming Job is a godly man who's suffering. But Job's friends are coming against him and saying, "Job, this is how the world works. You reap what you sow, so you're enduring affliction, so you must have sinned. And God is now punishing you for that specific sin." Now, there's some truth to what they're saying, and we will get into that. We do reap what we sow, and yet they've made it so simple. They have it all figured out. Job is here suffering because of a specific sin in his life. And if only he would repent, then he would be healed. But Job has, throughout these chapters, been contending for his blamelessness. Of course, he's not saying he's perfect. He says that many times throughout, that he has sinned. But it's not for a specific sin that God is afflicting him. That's what he's been arguing. He's suffering, and yet we can say he's innocent. He's being afflicted, and yet there's no specific sin in his life that could be pointed to that needs to be repented of. And so here is Job, and he wants to bring his complaints to God. Job is confessing, God, I know that you are in control of everything. You are sovereign. You are over all. And yet he's wrestling with the providences that have come his way. And so he wants to bring his case before God, but here's the problem. Who can go to court against God? Here is Job. He's this little, tiny, insignificant man. And he's raising his complaints against God. And he's saying, here, I'm weak, I'm small. I can't argue against God. And so it's this context of in which Job is seeing his smallness, and he wants to speak with the Lord, that he feels this need for a mediator, one who can stand between him and God and plead his case, one who could stand there in that gap and deal with God on his behalf. So that's Job's context. He's wrestling with all this suffering, and he wants to speak with God, but he feels his own insignificance. But when we get to the Heidelberg Catechism, we also hear about a mediator. But we need to recognize the context is different. There's a difference in context here. The context in the Heidelberg Catechism is not of suffering, but a context of judgment, of just judgment. We've already heard in our section on misery that we are guilty rebels, and we stand before God condemned, and his just wrath is coming our way. And so you see in question 12, it raises this reality that we need an escape. That's really that key word in question 12. Is there a way of escape? God's wrath is coming, and justly so. And so how can we escape his wrath and be received again into his favor? Is there someone who can stand between God and us? And so we need to recognize that there's two very different contexts here, Job's context and the Heidelberg Catechism's context. And yet, what Job says in verse 32 and 33 really brings out a lot of the truths that apply to the Heidelberg Catechism's context, this context of judgment. And we'll hear that as we go through this sermon together, and especially this, Job's desire, his realization that he needs a mediator. If you take anything away, let it be this: I need a mediator that stands between God and between me. And so that's what we'll see this afternoon. We need a mediator. First, our desperate situation. Second, our unsuccessful searching. And third, our only solution. We need a mediator. And first of all, our desperate situation. Well, as we've already said, the first section of the Heidelberg Catechism on our misery has left us realizing, and maybe with fresh eyes, really that by nature, we are rebellious sinners and our situation is desperate. That's what I've been feeling as we've worked through these Lord's days. Our situation by nature is desperate. We saw that we are the problem. We are the problem. We due to our rebellion in Adam, we have a corrupt nature, and flowing out of that is corruption. And like Jesus says, a bad tree produces bad fruit. We've heard that. We've been wrestling with that. We've been feeling that. And last time we saw how God justly punishes our sin with temporal and especially eternal punishment. And we trembled before the horrors of hell as we gazed into that dark pit. And so really it's with hell in mind that question 12 is asked. And it's asked with a tone of desperation. You need to hear that in the catechism. Is there no way by which we may escape that punishment and be again received into favor? Is there any way that we can avoid the reality of hell becoming my reality? With all that we have said about its horrors, how can we escape? How can we be welcomed again, be received again into the favor, the grace of God? Is there a way to be embraced by the Father's arms rather than the flames of hell? That's really the sentiment of question 12. And look at the answer. Lord's Day 5 really begins by, again, affirming our desperate situation. God will have his justice satisfied. That's our problem. Since we are rebels, God himself is our problem because he is just. And our sin can't be brushed under the rug. We can't get away from his justice. It must be satisfied, as the question and answer says. And so the very nature of who God is in his justice makes our situation all the more desperate. And we hear something of this in verse 32. Job says, "For God is not a man as I am, that I may answer him and that we should go to court together." God is not a man. He's not like us. If God was a man, our situation wouldn't be so bad. I could hope that maybe his mercy will win the day. I could hope that he wouldn't be maybe so consistent on the day of judgment, that he would overlook things a little bit. That would not be so bad. If God was a man, then I could plead with him, I could cry before him, and maybe we could just work it out. But God is not a man. He's not a man. He's not like us. His justice must be satisfied. He is just, and so he cannot overlook sin. He is immortal, almighty, all-wise, and he is righteous. And so having a view of the one with whom we have to do, the one with whom we must be reconciled to, that increases the desperation of our situation. We don't stand a chance in court against God. We can't be hoping on getting to that final day, getting to court, and hoping somehow it'll just work out. No, God's justice must be satisfied. We have offended him. We've sinned against him. And so we must deal with him. And so I ask you, have you been to court with God? Have you been to court with God? Have you gone face to face with the Lord, recognizing where you stand before him, recognizing yourself as a rebel, confessing, owning up to what you've done, how you've treated him, how you've abused his subjects, how you've willfully gone against his law? Have you gone to court with God? That needs to happen in this life. That needs to happen before we go to court with him on the judgment day. We need to come to grips with the reality of his justice. And it's when we go to court with God, we recognize that none of our excuses work anymore. When we're standing before God, suddenly all of those excuses that sounded so good, they just vaporize. They disappear. He is righteous. He's right in his judgments. And so I can't stand before him. My promises to do better, they don't work. My promises of fixing my life, reforming my life, improving my life, they're never enough. As question 13 tells us, we daily increase our debt. We daily increase our debt. That is, we don't satisfy the just judge. All we do is dig a bigger hole. We increase the size of our debt. And so much unlike what the rich young ruler thought. He thought that we could fulfill the law, just add maybe one more law to what I've already been doing, and then I'll be right with God. That's his way of thinking. But the Bible is clear that doesn't work. That doesn't work. We only go deeper into debt because we can't keep God's law perfectly. And the reality is that even our pleas for mercy, if that's all we had was, Lord, I'm sorry, if that's all we could say before God, God's justice wouldn't be satisfied. That wouldn't be enough. His justice needs to be satisfied. He can't just overlook sin. We understand this in a human way. Here we're in a courtroom. Here's a murderer. He's on trial. And here's the judge. And the judge is saying, you are guilty of murder. It's clear. And if the murderer says, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for what I've done. I don't want the punishment that's coming my way. I'm sorry. Justice needs to be satisfied. That's not going to work. Just saying sorry isn't going to satisfy justice. And so I wonder, have you been in God's courtroom before? Have you seen that? That there's literally nothing you can do to satisfy God's justice. That his just judgment is eternal punishment. And that if it's up to you, if it's left to you to plead your own case, you are guilty. Well, this is our desperate situation. Full satisfaction must be made. Payment must be made for our sin. The righteousness of God requires this right law keeping, but also the debt that we have incurred would be covered. And so we need to leave the courtroom and really go and try to find another mediator, one who can plead our case, one who can stand there on our behalf. And that's what question 14 is doing. And this takes us to our second point, our unsuccessful searching. Question 14, can there be found anywhere one who is a mere creature able to satisfy for us? So here's the picture. I've just recognized that I only dig the hole deeper and that I can't satisfy the judge's justice. And so now I'm going out and I'm looking. Is there anyone here who can stand between God and myself and satisfy his justice on my behalf? And the answer is none. None. There is no mere creature who can do this. Verse 33, this is Job's complaint. This is Job's complaint. Nor is there any mediator between us. Job is recognizing that he can't take up his own cause before God. He needs a mediator, someone to go between him and God. And yet as he looks out over the world, there's not a man that can do it. There's no one. No mere creature who can fulfill this task. And our catechism gives us two reasons why. Number one, God won't punish another creature for our sin. That's not just. God won't punish another creature for our sin. And we know this. God deals with us individually for our own sins. Deuteronomy 24:16, for example, says, every man shall be put to death for his own sin. We are accountable for our own sin. We sow the sin, and so we reap the consequences. And so, no, God can't punish another creature for the sins that we have committed. That would be unjust. And so since God is the just judge, he's not going to place our punishment onto our pet or any animal. There's no creature that he can put our punishment onto. He's not going to put our punishment onto an angel. The angel didn't sin in our place. And so these creatures can't be punished because that wouldn't be just for God to do so. Humanity has sinned against God, and so humanity must pay the penalty. But secondly, no mere creature can sustain the burden of God's eternal wrath against sin. And so the Catechism is saying, even if we could find an animal or an angel, a mere creature that out there could stand in our place, any of these creatures, they could not withstand God's judgment, the burden of God's eternal wrath against sin. Their shoulders aren't broad enough to be able to bear that punishment so that we could escape. Last time we heard of the horrors of hell, and there's no mere creature that could endure hell in our place. No angel can withstand hell and get to the bottom of the bottomless pit and say, "It is finished." No creature can do that. God's cup of wrath is mixed too strong. And so no animal or angel can drink it for us. And so really, again, the Catechism, using the truths of Scripture, is pressing on us this biblical reality that God is the just judge, that we have rebelled against him, that he must have his justice satisfied, and he will have it satisfied. And our only options are either we satisfy it ourselves in hell, or we find someone else to satisfy it for us. But here's the problem. We're looking around and there's no mere creature that can stand in our place. And we need a mediator, but not just any old mediator. We need a special and a unique mediator, but we can't seem to find one. That's the problem that we're finding here in question 14. But as you're listening to this, maybe you say, well, can't animals actually satisfy God's justice? What about the sacrifices? What about the whole sacrificial system? Weren't animals paying for the sins of Old Testament saints? No, they weren't. Hebrews 10, verse 4 tells us the blood of bulls and goats will never pay for sin. That was true in the Old Testament too. These sacrifices were being given due to man's sin. They were a substitute, but they could never satisfy God's wrath in themselves. They could never pay for man's sin. They were only good if they were pointing forward to a greater sacrifice. And this point becomes clear in Romans 3, verse 25. There Paul says, In God's forbearance, he had passed over the sins that were previously committed. And there in Romans 3, Paul is telling us that God is in the Old Testament passing over the sins of his Old Testament saints. He's passing over them, but he's not dealing with them. So in the Old Testament, we find God passing over the saints' sins as they're sprinkling the blood of the sacrifices. He's passing over them, but as God is passing over them, there's really this growing mountain of sin that needs to be dealt with. And so when we come to the end of the Old Testament, we find that there's this massive mountain of sin that God has passed over, and these sins are still undealt with. And so if you were a thinking Jew in this time, you would have been asking, when is God going to have his justice satisfied? When is he going to deal with these sins and not just pass over them as if they don't exist. When is that going to happen? The sacrificial system, it can't provide the solution. It's not an end in itself. These animals can't die and satisfy the justice of God in the place of man's sin. That's really the problem that we find in question 14. So we've looked at our desperate situation, our unsuccessful searching after another mediator, and this really drives us to the only solution. Here we've seen that every other doorway has been closed, that there's no mediators out here in this world that we can find for us to stand between God and ourselves. And so the Heidelberg Catechism is teaching us that we need to own up to our own poverty. We can't figure this out ourselves. And so we only have one place to look, and that's question 15. Almost again, with that exasperated tone, what sort of mediator and deliverer then must we seek for? Answer, for one who is very man and perfectly righteous, and yet more powerful than all creatures, that is one who is also very God. And so we need a special, that is, we need a unique mediator. As Job says, we need a mediator who can lay his hand on God and on ourselves. We need one that can perfectly stand between God and man. And this mediator needs to meet two basic requirements. You see that. First, he needs to be man. Can't be an animal, can't be an angel. Must be a man. It was man that sinned, and so therefore man must pay for his sin. God won't make another creature pay for us. But more than that, this man must be righteous. That is, he can't have any of his own sins that he's needing to pay for. He must be righteous. He must be perfect. And this is our problem, because as we look around, we can't find this righteous man. We can't find this perfect man. But secondly, he also needs to be God. He needs to be true God. That is, he needs to be powerful enough to sustain God's eternal wrath against sin and deliver us from it. Only God can bear the wrath of God. And so this mediator, we need a special, a unique mediator that is both God and man. And so don't we see how fitting Job's cry is? If we're looking out over creation, here he says, there is no mediator between us who can lay a hand on both of us. That's a very fitting cry as we contemplate our situation. If God leaves us to ourselves, this is a very fitting cry, because we need a mediator. But where can we find a mediator like this? Where can we find one that can lay a hand on God and man and plead for man? That really brings us back to Romans 3. I already quoted Romans 3:25, but verses 24 and 26 help us fill in this picture. Here's Paul, and he's pressing home that God's righteousness must be satisfied. God must be just. In the Old Testament, verse 25 has told us he's just passed over sin. He hasn't been satisfying his justice. But then we read in verse 24, speaking of Christ, whom God sent forth as a propitiation by his blood through faith to demonstrate his righteousness. Do you hear that? Often we think of God sending forth Christ to save sinners, and that's gloriously true. But here in Romans 3:24, Paul is saying, God sends forth Christ to demonstrate his righteousness, his justice. And verse 26 answers the questions in our mind. To demonstrate at the present time his righteousness, that he might be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. Do you hear the glorious reality of that text? This text, in almost more than any other text, lit the fire of the Reformation. There is a God who yes, is just, and his justice must be satisfied. We can't figure it out through our own good works. That's never going to be enough. But he is the one who is just and the justifier of sinners. That is, he in his justice, in our salvation, he upholds his justice by sending Christ, this perfect mediator, the one who is both God and man, the one who lives that perfect life on man's behalf, fulfilling the law for us, dying in our place, dying that sinner's death, satisfying the justice, but also being God so that he can drink that cup and say, "It is finished." And so this text is fulfilled that he might be just. We heard about God's forgiveness this morning. When God forgives, he doesn't overlook his justice. That he might be just, but also the justifier, the one who saves, the one who declares sinners righteous in his presence. Well, how is that possible? It's through this only mediator. It's through faith in Jesus Christ, as Paul says there in Romans 3. Or as John says in 1 John 2, verse 1, if anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. That is, we have a mediator. We have one who can intercede before us. For us, before the Father, the one who can plead on our behalf. We have a mediator who can lay his hand on God and who can lay his hand on his people. What a beautiful picture. This is what Jesus does. He brings God and his people together. He brings their hands together. He causes them to shake hands in agreement that yes, God is just, but also the justifier through faith in Christ. He brings God and man together to embrace one another through the forgiveness that God offers in Jesus Christ. You need a mediator. That's the message. You need a mediator. Have you come to realize that? You can't go to court before God on that judgment day. You can't stand before him. You need a mediator. But here is the solution. It's Jesus Christ, the faithful God-man, the man who's perfectly righteous and the God who's powerful enough to sustain the burden of God's eternal punishment. Well, this is where the section of deliverance begins. It begins by telling us that if we're going to be delivered, we're not going to be delivered on our terms, but on God's. Deliverance doesn't come through me trying to work a little harder, do a little better, pray a little more. All good things, of course, but that is not going to save me in God's sight. There's only one way to escape, and there's only one way to be saved. It's through Jesus Christ. His name is the only name given among men whereby we might be saved. If there's going to be any hope for us, it's that God intervenes. And this is the glorious truth of this whole section of deliverance. It's that God does. He does intervene. He does provide a mediator. He's given us his own Son. Amen.